evening. It is 5 p.m. and this is Today in YGK on CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. Today in YGK is brought to you by CFRC's News Collective. CFRC's news programming is made possible by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Christina Laurie, and here are your local news headlines. At the last Environment, Infrastructure, and Transportation Committee meeting, members unanimously approved additional efforts to prevent, remove, and report graffiti. The report and recommendation for further action presented to the committee came from the city's Commissioner of Infrastructure, Transportation, and Emergency Services, Brad Joyce. It is estimated that the city deals with over 750 vandalism graffiti incidents annually, at a cost of approximately $250,000. Some of the most frequently targeted areas singled out in the report include the downtown core, Shannon Park, Victoria Park, Lyon Civic Gardens, Waveman Crossing, and bus shelters. While a touch of spray paint may just seem like an eyesore at most, Commissioner Joyce claims vandalism can have a significant negative impact on the city's image, make public spaces feel less safe, and destroy public amenities. This concern is heightened when it comes to what the city has classified as hate graffiti, referring to symbols, images, or texts that promote hate, discrimination, and violence. The report also states that these crimes, which fall under the large umbrella of mischief offenses, go largely unreported with little, if any, consequence to offenders. At the committee meeting reviewing the report, Williamsville Councillor Vincent Chinnani spoke to the issue of graffiti in his district, especially concerning business owners.
That's one of the big complaints I get is graffiti, especially during the summer, not so much during winter, but because a lot of the building, some city buildings, but a lot of public businesses have been, you know, coming up to me and expressing that there's graffiti problems. And even I once caught somebody graffitiing the sidewalks all the way down. But something needs to be done.
While the city currently takes action like using anti-graffiti coating on surfaces and trying to remove graffiti within 24 hours after being reported, the report points out the missing piece is education and awareness. Karen Santucci, Director of Public Works and Solid Waste, spoke to this and how the city plans to fill the gap before the committee.
The one element we're really missing is education, right? Like there's little bits and pieces on our website that say, what do you do if there's graffiti? Who do you call? What department is it? How do I remove it? We're sort of missing that element, and that element will allow residents to be able to identify graffiti more quickly, get it into the city in a manner that we're able to deal with that. If it's on private property, give them some information on, do I need to get a hold of police? Do I need to get a hold of bylaw? And how do I remove that? So I think it will add elements that we don't have from the public's use and also from internal city staff in terms of how do I make sure that all of these pieces that we have are in one place that everyone can see what our graffiti program is in totality, and that can then be used by everyone and not just in bits and pieces.
The recommendation given by Joyce was to develop a communications plan to provide important graffiti management information to residents regarding prevention, reporting, and removal techniques. This would also include information about ways to deal with hate graffiti, available street art programs, and organizing community cleanup programs. One of the first moves will be creating a webpage for the specific topic. Communications-based anti-graffiti measures will be ready for rollout in mid-2025, providing more information and resources for residents. This has been Christina Laurie with CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative. Residents may see a more colorful Kingston in the coming years as the city embarks on a 3-year pilot project to support mural creation in 2025. A report by Jennifer Campbell, the city's Commissioner of Community Services, presented to the Arts, Recreation, and Community Policies Committee, provided an overview as public art policy has changed and developed over the years. Campbell reported ever-increasing interest in public art and murals since policy was officially put in place in 2014, and even more so since amendments were made in spring 2023 to further reduce barriers for artists and simplify the process of installing murals. The report catalogs 16 pieces throughout the city. The city is taking this initiative to beautify Kingston a step further with a pilot project launching next year. In the coming years, the city aims to position Kingston as a center for, quote, creative placemaking, through art that enhances public spaces, celebrates the city's identity, and supports local artists. The city's Director of Arts and Culture Services, Danica Lockhead, explains some of the vision behind this project before the committee.
The report speaks to the pilot project, which is really, you know, a reflection and responding to some of the challenges that we heard from artists in the community, from business owners, from property owners, from community groups who are really excited to do and deliver a mural in the community, but really don't have access to specific resources to support things like artist fees, key services, priming walls, you know, purchasing paint, securing the right materials or equipment for installation. And so the pilot project is going to reallocate and dedicate some existing budget that we have in our public art envelope to really support and hopefully, you know, create more incentives for murals to take place going forward.
As Locke had explained, enhanced services and support for artists will be provided through the project. A total of $150,000 will be allocated to cover costs associated with expanding mural support services. Notably, while previous efforts were exclusively targeting private property, this project will also give artists the opportunity to propose murals on public property. This work is also connected to the city's latest initiatives tackling graffiti, providing more opportunities for creative expression and covering blank surfaces, which have a high risk of being tagged with art. The pilot project will be moving forward in 2025 with unanimous support from the committee. Lockhead had the following closing remarks.
I think if we see larger scale mural projects, there's going to be, you know, a clear demonstration of the benefit of these murals, both in the public realm, but also to the potential business or wherever the mural goes. I think there will be a larger interest in having these murals in place.
Producer Mackenzie Lee, hailing from Kingston, is returning to her hometown for a screening of her most recent film with director Ryan Ward, Daughter of the Sun. Lee's career in the arts began at 10 years old at Theater 5 in Kingston. While Lee had the opportunity to leave the city after high school with an internship at Soulpepper Theater and a scholarship at Ryerson University waiting for her in Toronto, she decided to stick around and study at Queen's University. As she entered the world of film, she met her husband, director Ryan Ward, and they started their production company, Memory Pill, together in 2008. Their first feature film, Son of the Sunshine, which Lee produced and Ward directed, was nominated for Best Original Screenplay at the 2012 Canadian Screen Awards. Since leaving Kingston, Lee has been splitting her time between LA and Manitoba, producing several films and preparing to direct her first feature film next winter. Daughter of the Sun, the sequel to Son of the Sunshine, will be coming to Landmark on Dalton Avenue on December 19th. Daughter of the Sun has already won multiple awards on its festival run, including the Audience Award for Best Feature Film at the Fantasia International Film Festival. Their stop in Kingston marks the tour coming to an end. I sat down with Lee and Ward to chat about the screening in Kingston this week.
Well, to start us off, what can folks expect walking into the theater on December 19th for Daughters of the Sun here in Kingston?
They can expect a father-daughter road trip drama. It's about a young girl who's 12 years old who's traveling across Canada with her father, who has Tourette's syndrome and also a power to heal. And she is developing that power, and the film is really about their relationship together. And they meet a group of other travelers on the road who sort of they befriend and then want to use that power toward a darker purpose.
Mm-hmm. And then in terms of the tone, it does have this very heartfelt, you know, bond between this father and daughter. It also has a very 70s kind of vintage aesthetic, kind of a throwback vibe. And in terms of the supernatural elements, the fantastical elements, although they are kind of a big part of the film is still really just a drama grounded in reality, and the magic creeps around the edges.
Yeah, and this is a big question because it sounds like there's a lot going on here. What was sort of your inspiration behind this film? Did you pull from your real life experiences, just what you were interested in? What's the story there?
This film is actually a sequel to a previous feature that we did called Son of the Sunshine. And it was about the father when he was young and he was coming of age and he was kind of understanding what his power is. And that film did very well for us in Canada. It was nominated for a CSA and played all over the place. And then, yeah, we just wanted to continue that story and imagine the father as a father, I guess, in this film. At the end of the first film, his daughter is born and she's stillborn and he brings her back to life. And then in this film, the trajectory of, I won't ruin it for you, is that the young girl learns to use her power, you know. But that's all I'll say about that.
Yeah, no spoilers. And I mean, you've already been in the midst of an award-winning tour. What have you heard from audiences so far?
Audiences love the movie. I mean, I think you captured it. It's a really unique blend of a lot of things going on. So, I mean, our production company is called Memory Pill. We're based in Manitoba, mostly, and then we also do spend some time in LA. But we really are focused on original kind of director driven films. So I think that's what people have been taken away, is they haven't seen anything like this before. People have been emotional. Some people have left the theater in tears. And again, I won't give any spoilers, but so I think the audiences are really just really love the bond between this father and daughter and the emotional, heartfelt tale.
Yeah. And Kenzie, how does it feel to be returning to your hometown?
It's kind of surreal. I was just thinking about it this morning. You know, I grew up in Kingston, going to Rideau and KCVI, and I'm a Queens alum as well. And my entire artistic journey and creative journey started at 10 years old at Theatre 5 in Kingston as an actor. I spent a lot of time acting around town at the Domino and the Grand Theatre, and sort of just really fell in love with the arts. And so to come home and to be supported by so many other artists in the community and my friends and family, it's really satisfying, because it's, you know, I've really gone around the horn. I've been in Toronto and LA and Manitoba, and it's nice to come home and kind of celebrate this the end of our big festival run back at home where it all started.
And side note, Mackenzie's theater mentor, her old director, Charles Robinson, is going to be doing the Q&A.
Charles Robertson, that's
Robinson,
right.
Charles mm-hmm. Robertson.
Yeah. Yep. It is like a homecoming.
Definitely, definitely. Right around the Christmas season too, so it's perfect.
I was wondering if you could speak a bit. Obviously, you're still very connected to your roots here in Kingston, but going from the Kingston local scene to, you know, I mean, you're still based in Canada, but, you know, that LA scene, that Toronto scene, what have you noticed in that jump?
I mean, I think one thing I love about Kingston is the vibrant art scene. I think for the size of the town, I think because we are really close to the hubs of also like Toronto and Montreal, we get those influences as well, but it's just so packed with talent, not just, you know, in the acting scene or the theater scene, but in music. And I think that even spills over into like the restaurants and the culinary scene as well. So I've always been so proud to be from Kingston. And I think the talent there is just on par with the talent that I see in Toronto and LA as well.
Once again, that was director Ryan Ward and producer Mackenzie Lee on the upcoming screening of their newest film, Daughter of the Sun, in Kingston. This has been Christina Laurie with CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative.
Hello, Kingston. I'm Isabella Garrido, your CFRC sports reporter, and you're tuned in to the CFRC Sports Desk, your go-to spot for all the latest in Queen's University athletics. We've got a lot to cover, so let's dive right into some exciting upcoming games and recent highlights from our Gales. First up, women's hockey. The Queen's Gales are back in action after a strong finish to their first half of the 2024-25 season. Gales earned a solid 4-2 victory over the York Lions just before our winter break. Despite some weather delays forcing a late arrival, the team came out strong and never looked back, with goals from Sophie Hudson, Karis Colley, Allison Reeves, and a late empty netter from Taya Leonard. Hudson, who was instrumental in this win, contributed a goal and two assists before leaving the ice in pain after blocking a shot. Her status in the upcoming game remains uncertain, but Gales are looking to keep the momentum going. Gales will return to the Memorial Center on January 3rd to take on the Concordia Stingers. Puck drop is at 7:30 p.m., so be sure to mark your calendars and show your support as the team looks to continue their winning ways into the new year. Moving over to men's hockey, the Gales have been red hot recently, jumping to number 4 in the U Sports Top 10 rankings. Closed out the first half of the season with back-to-back wins over UQTR and Waterloo, both by a score of 3-2. Queens enters the winter break in second place in the OUA East Division with an impressive 15-3-00 record. January 10th, those Gales will be facing the Nipissing Lakers at the Memorial Center with a puck drop at 7 p.m. A win here could be a huge step towards maintaining their position in the standings, so don't miss it. Turning now to women's basketball, the Queens Gales are gearing up for a big matchup on January 10th against the Laurentian Voyagers. This game will be held at the Arc, and with a strong performance so far this season, the Gales are looking to continue their push towards the playoffs. Tip-off is at 6 p.m., and it's sure to be an exciting game. As for the women's volleyball team, they have climbed to number 3 in the U Sports rankings after sweeping the Toronto Varsity Blues in straight sets this past weekend. Their solid 11-1 record has them sitting atop at the OUA standings, and they'll be looking to carry that momentum into the second half of the season when they resume play in January. That's all for now on the Queens Gales, but don't forget, whether it's hockey, basketball, or volleyball, there's always something exciting happening at Queens. Make sure to come out and support your teams in 2025. This has been Isabella Garrido with your CFRC Sports Desk. Now back to Christina Laurie with your weather report for this evening. Stay tuned.
This is Jesse Bell with your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Wednesday, December 18th, 3 degrees with a 30% chance of flurries dropping down to minus 8 overnight. And then we've got a cold spell heading into the weekend, minus 5 on Thursday, December 19th, dropping to minus 11 overnight. Minus 4 on Friday, December 20th, dropping to minus 10 overnight with a 60% chance of flurries. And then the final weekend before Christmas, Saturday, December 21st, daytime high of minus 7 with a 40% chance of precipitation, dropping down to a blisteringly cold minus 16 overnight, and then Sunday, December 22nd, it'll be sunny with a daytime high of minus 8. This is Jesse Bell with your City of Kingston traffic report for the week of December 16th, 2024. We begin with a list of road closures for this week. Albert Street, Princess to 486 Albert is closed until the end of the year, December 31st, to accommodate construction activity and staging at 484 Albert Street. Bagot Street, Dufferin to Charles is closed until December 23rd for a mobile crane operation. And Market Street, King to Ontario is closed December 21st from 8 a.m. to 11 p.m. for downtown Kingston activations.
Here are some other delays to keep an eye on this week. Aberdeen Street, Johnson to Earl, expect delays and closures along Aberdeen for a contractor to complete road and sewer reconstruction. Bayridge Drive, Princess to Taylor Kidd, expect delays while a contractor begins Phase 2 of the Bayridge Drive active transportation upgrades. Collins Bay Road, Prince Charles to Edwin and Princess, expect delays while a contractor completes Phase 2 of the Princess and Collins Bay active transportation improvements. Gardner's Road at Centennial and Creekford, expect delays while a contractor completes intersection widening, traffic signal updates, and cycling and pedestrian improvements. Highway 2, Abbeydon to St. Lawrence. Expect delays to complete enhanced flood protection of Abbeydon Road, Highway 2, and St. Lawrence Avenue. Sir John A. MacDonald Boulevard at Elmwood. Expect delays while a contractor upgrades the intersection at Sir John A. MacDonald Boulevard and Elmwood Street, including replacement of street lighting, new traffic lights, replacement of asphalt on roadways, and a new multi-use pathway south of the intersection towards Bath Road. And that's a wrap for your City of Kingston traffic report for the week of Monday, December 2nd, 2024.
Thank you for tuning in to CFRC's local news programming. To revisit episodes of Today in YGK and hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Today in YGK is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear, 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
What'll I Wear offers the best in vintage, funky, one-of-a-kind treasures, clothing, accessories, and a fabulous selection of jewels, vintage and new. Find the cutest purse, the most dashing of hats and sunglasses, everything to complete your individual look. What'll I Wear has it all. They can dress you from top to bottom. Find your new fashion fave at What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street in Kingston. Visit their new location and follow them on Facebook to keep up to date with what's in store at What'll I Wear. Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present a song from local artist Kakao's third album, Quantum Entanglement, released on November 29th. Quantum Entanglement is inspired by the cosmic placement of the soul in the universe, connected as one with a newly sober mind fueling the creation process. The album channels the focus of intent and inspiration of spirituality in raising the vibrational state of self and awareness in the connection of souls with quantum entanglement theories. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via Visit Kingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream Quantum Entanglement on your favorite platforms and enjoy a selection from it entitled Affinity here with us now on CFRC 101.9 FM. Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present Sheep and Wolf's Clothing's latest single, When Echoes Speak, released on November 18th. The track opens with a mechanical winding sound captured from a clicker borrowed from the artist's workplace, which evolves into the rhythmic backbone of the intro. Inspired by the theme song of Rascal Does Not Dream, the bridge section shifts into a more rhythmic, aggressive reimagining. The final 75 seconds feature intricate polymetric layers and different meters with various instruments resonance, building on a foundation of claps, creating a dense, complex timbre. A unique fusion of virtual and live instruments, the song delivers depth in both tone and rhythm. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visit kingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream When Echoes Speak on your favorite platforms and enjoy it here with us now on CFRC 101.9 FM. Thank you.
The Corridor is an award-winning news program hosted by Dinah Jansen and Jesse Bell, airing every Thursday at 5 p.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM. With contributions from local Journalism Initiative reporters ranging from Morrisburg to Coburg, The Corridor is your premier destination for truly local news that matters to you. The Corridor is also available as a podcast on all major podcast streaming platforms.
This is CFRC 101.9 FM, your campus and community radio station, broadcast from the basement of Kerutas Hall, Queen's University, Kingston. You can also hear this program locally on Cogeco Cable, Channel 282, and is streamed online at cfrc.ca. Welcome to BioTechBit. This is your host, Chris Saul. Today we will hear a talk by Barbara O'Neill, health expert, on the topic Healthy Oil. This program was produced and distributed by Key Health Podcast. Before that, here are a few messages.
Tree Canada's National Greening Program is planting seedlings across five regions of the country: BC, the Prairies, Ontario, Quebec, and the Atlantic. They plant in areas that are in need of reforestation or afforestation across Canada. Tree Canada selects sites where appropriate native species will be planted to make sure that natural forests come back to life. To learn more or to get involved, go to treecanada.ca.
I faced it. I have Alzheimer's disease.
My diagnosis has let me get on with my life my way.
The more we learned about my grandfather's dementia, the more we could face the future and make plans.
My husband, Tom, and I spoke to our doctor right away.
I have Alzheimer's, but it doesn't have me.
I faced it. So can you.
For more information about early diagnosis, visit alzheimer.ca.
CFRC is active on every social media platform. Check us out at CFRC Radio on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok, and on Twitter at CFRC.
I'd like to show you the molecular structure of fats. You see, when you understand the molecular structure of fats, then you begin to understand how the body uses it. You begin to understand why the body uses it in that way. So you will never again be swayed by popular opinion on should we eat fats, what are the best fats, what are the bad fats.
That was Barbara O'Neill, a naturopath and health educator dedicated to promoting natural ways to achieve optimal health. Today, we're going to talk about a crucial topic in nutrition, the importance of eating different types of fats. Let's listen to Barbara talk about our first fat.
I'm going to begin by showing you the omega-3 fatty acid. Omega-3 is a fat that we hear a lot of, and the reason for that is that it's an essential fatty acid. You might often see it written like this, EFA, essential fatty acid. What essential means is that the body cannot make it, you have to put it in. Whenever you read the word essential, that's what it means. And what are we told is the highest source of omega-3? Fish? And yet no creature can put omega-3 into their fatty acid chain, only plants can. So why are fish so high? Because fish are eating a one-celled algae that is high. So you can do superior to fish oil. You can get your omega-3 by foods, by plant foods. Flaxseed is the highest source of omega-3. Flaxseed and linseed are basically the same thing. Chia seed is the second highest source of omega-3.
So those are good plant sources of omega-3s. What makes omega-3 important?
What I'd like to show you now is why it is so important in the body. Omega-3 is an 18-chain fatty acid. This is the molecular structure of omega-3. There are 19 trillion of these in one drop of oil. So that's the magnification that we're looking at. Notice that there are hydrogen atoms either side, and right in the middle, they are linked together by carbon atoms. What the three means that at the third carbon atom, there's a double bond. So let's count this. One, two, three. The double bond means that instead of one link, there are two links. And whenever you get a double bond, these hydrogen atoms go, and the hydrogen atoms underneath develop an electromagnetic field between them. As a result, they start to repel each other, and that causes a kink in the chain because of this repelling action. In omega-3, or the omega-3 found in flaxseed and linseed, there are three double bonds. So one, two, three, we've got another one there. One, two, three, and we have another one there. So these double bonds are gone. These hydrogen atoms are gone, and the electromagnetic field is happening underneath. This causes three kinks in the chain. Number two kink, number three kink, causing the oil to be a very fluid oil. It's a very thin oil because of its three double bonds. What do they paint cricket bats with? With linseed oil, because it disperses so easily. So when you eat this oil, it causes the blood to thin. It disperses on the skin. It's a lovely oil to take via mouth, so you get nice supple skin. The body loves using this omega-3 for cell membrane function and repair. So the name given to this oil is a polyunsaturated fatty acid. Poly meaning more than one double bond. Unsaturated because there are three empty spots on the fatty acid chain. Let's have a look at the effect of the double bonds in the body. They create an electromagnetic field. That's important for us because we are electrical people. There's a spark of electricity in every cell of the body. And specifically, our electrical system is our nervous system. So it's a great brain food. Double bonds are also light sensitive. That means the light is attracted into these empty spots. Those empty spots are also heat sensitive. The heat is attracted in. And they also act like a magnet to oxygen. What this means is that when we eat these oils, our electromagnetic field is insured. We absorb more light, more vitamin D. We're able to manage our heat better in our body, and we're getting more oxygen. Remember, the most vital element needed for life? Cancer cannot live in the presence of oxygen. What an amazing oil. In fact, some writers have called this a super polyunsaturated fatty acid. The body uses omega-3 for the starting point in the anti-inflammatory cascade, so it's a powerful anti-inflammatory.
How about the next fat source?
What about sunflower? Sunflower contains omega-6 fatty acids. It is also an 18-chain fatty acid, but the 6 indicates the position on the fatty acid chain of the first double bond. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There's its first double bond, and there are two double bonds in this fatty acid chain. Here's another one here. So we've got hydrogen atoms along here, hydrogen atoms along here, and all along the bottom. And we've got two repelling actions here, always under the double bond. So that means we have two kinks in this fatty acid chain. It's not as thin an oil, but it is still quite a thin oil. This is also given the name polyunsaturated fatty acid. Poly meaning more than one double bond. Unsaturated because there's still empty spots on the fatty acid chain.
How about the next fat source?
What about olive and almond oil? They are high in omega-9. 9 indicating the position on the fatty acid chain of the first double bond. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. There's our double bond there. And there is only one double bond in olive oil and almond oil. So you've got your hydrogen atoms along here and along here and also along this area here. We've got one repelling action. So there's only one kink in olive oil, almond oil. As a result, this oil is called a monounsaturated fatty acid. Mono meaning one double bond, unsaturated because there is still an empty spot on the fatty acid chain.
And the final oil?
What about coconut? Coconut oil, instead of being a long-chain fatty acid like these three 18-chain fatty acids, coconut contains short and medium-chain fatty acids. I have drawn a 10-chain fatty acid here, which is considered a short-chain fatty acid. There are no double bonds in coconut, so every spot is full. And in the cold weather, it's a solid fat. So this fat is called a saturated fat. Saturated because there are no double bonds.
So which oil do we use?
So what is the best oil? Well, which body function are you talking about? Because our body uses them all and it needs them all. I'll give you a simple illustration to give you an idea of this. I used to work in an operating theatre, and in the operating theatre we had a core team. We had our surgeon, we had our, and we'll call our surgeon three double bonds. We had our assisting physician, there's two double bonds. We had our theatre nurse, one double bond, and we had our trolley boy, no double bond. Our trolley boy's name was Fred, and he was a very stocky, strong young man of about 35. He was very good at his job. He could lift the patients with ease. He was so strong. He was very good at scrubbing out infected theatres. We enjoyed Fred because he did his job well, but there was just one area where we were constantly trying to refine Fred. When it was time to take the patient into recovery, I would say to Fred, "Fred, it is time to wheel the patient in recovery." And he'd say, "Fine." And he'd start wheeling it, but he would bang the trolley against the door. He would bang it. And we were constantly saying, "Fred, gentle, gentle." And he was gentle. You know, he had a job to do and he just did it. Now, if the surgeon didn't turn up, would we put Fred on the job of surgery? No, no, no. And if Fred didn't turn up one day, would we put the surgeon on Fred's job? No, no, no. The surgeon had beautiful hands and we don't want to hurt the hands. Can you see my illustration? In the operating theatre, every member of the team was vital, and actually we could not function if any of them were not there. And it is exactly the same with these oils in the human body. Every oil has its function. The body loves using omega-3 for cell membrane function and repair.
Barbara will now go into more depth about omega-3 salve.
Let me show you the omega-3 family. The omega-3 that is found in flaxseed, linseed, is called alpha-linolenic acid. Alpha-linolenic acid has three double bonds. And we've already seen that's quite a fluid oil. In the body, it's broken down to EPA. In the body, ALA is broken down to EPA. EPA has five double bonds. In the body, EPA is broken down to DHA. And DHA has six double bonds. So you can see how fluid these other oils are, incredibly fluid. And the body loves using DHA for cell membrane function and repair. In the fish eats ALA in the one-celled algae. In the fish, ALA is converted to EPA. In the fish, EPA is converted to DHA. And then man extracts DHA and says, ah, this is superior because the DHA that the cell uses is already available for you. You don't have to wait for the body to convert this to this to this. But if three double bonds is sensitive to light, heat, and oxygen, how sensitive is six double bonds? And I question the ability to extract the DHA and not have it exposed to light, heat, and oxygen, and thus destroyed. And the fish that are the highest in DHA are also the highest in mercury. And of course, the DHA being a fat is found in the fat. And so I believe it is much safer and much easier just to get your omega-3s from the flaxseed or the chia seed. Our waterways and our seas are very polluted today, and it's difficult to get fish oil that is not contaminated.
How does the body use each of these oils?
So what is the best oil? Your body uses them for different functions. Your body loves using the omega-3 for cell membrane function and repair. Omega-6 and omega-9 are used as side issues, whereas the body loves burning coconut oil as fuel. Let me show you. Let's go to the gastrointestinal tract. Here is mouth. Here is your esophagus. Here is stomach. Here is liver. Here is gallbladder. Bile duct comes down, and bile duct connects with the neck of the pancreas. And here is your duodenum, the first part of the small intestine. There's pyloric sphincter. The duodenum is lined with little villi. Let me magnify the villi. Up in the middle of the villi is the lacteal. This is part of the lymphatic system. And over the villi is a blood capillary network. Do you remember I said to you the other day, anything that goes in our gastrointestinal tract is not part of you or me till it gets broken down to tiny substances, then absorbed into the blood. Let me show you now what happens with the three long-chain fatty acids. They come into the mouth, they are not dealt with in the mouth. They come into the stomach, they are not dealt with in the stomach. They come into the duodenum, bile from the gallbladder emulsifies it or breaks it down into tiny little particles. Then pancreatic lipase further breaks it down to glycerol and fatty acids, and then it is absorbed through the brush border around the lacteal, going straight to the, through the brush border around the villi and into the lacteal. So there's your lacteal there. The lymphatic system takes it to the liver. The liver sees these three long chain fatty acids and says, the surgeons have appeared. Store them. Keeping them for cell membrane function and repair.
And for coconut oil?
This is not what happens with the coconut oil with its short and medium chain fatty acids. It comes into the mouth, and underneath the tongue are sublingual glands that release lingual lipase. Lingual lipase is an enzyme that breaks down only short and medium chain fatty acids. So the coconut is unique in that the breakdown happens in the mouth. The breakdown having already begun, it comes into the stomach, breakdown's already happening. Comes into the duodenum, does not need bile, does not need pancreatic lipase. Is taken through the lining of the gut straight into the blood. The coconut oil is the only one that gets taken through to the blood, taken to the liver, burnt as fuel. It's an amazing oil. So it is burnt as fuel immediately. No other oil is like that. So if someone wanted to eat an oil that the body burnt, what would they eat? The coconut. So this is the best waste loss oil because the body does not store it. The body burns it as fuel. Now, if someone's going to drink huge amounts of coconut oil, maybe the body will be forced to store it because so much is coming in. Whereas the body stores these long-chain fatty acids. And yet we have been told for so long, if you want to lose weight, you must stop the coconut. It's a saturated fat. Saturated fats have got a bad name, and yet they do not deserve that bad name. It can be like the farmer who got a whole lot of coconuts cheap. He gave them to his cows to fatten them up. The cows lost fat, put on muscles, started bounding around the paddocks. So if you want to lose weight, put on muscle and bound around the paddocks, what oil do you eat? The coconut.
What else about coconut oil?
Coconut has a few fatty acids. One is lauric acid. And lauric acid is found in coconut 48%. There's only one other food that has lauric acid. It's a strong antimicrobial fatty acid. Butter has 2%. That's the only other food that has it. Actually, breast milk has it too. They say breastfed babies are smarter because breast milk contains omega-3, omega-6, omega-9, saturated fats. It's an excellent fuel for babies, the best. Can't be equaled, actually. Coconut is also 40% antifungal. It's because of its other fatty acids as well as the lauric acid. It has caprylic acid and capri acid. It's an excellent oil. An excellent oil or cream or milk for people who have pancreatic problems or liver problems because it bypasses the need for bile and it bypasses the need for pancreatic lipase. And if you go into the supermarket and go to where they sell the baby formulas, the milk formulas, you will find in nearly every milk formula there will be either coconut oil or palm oil. And they add that to baby food because it's so easy to absorb, does not need the bile and does not need the pancreatic lipase.
Barbara will now tell us a little about Dr. Bruce Fyfe and his books.
Dr. Bruce Fyfe has written several books on the wonders of the coconut oil. One's called Coconut Cures, one's called The Miracle Oil Coconut Oil, one's called Oil Pulling. His two most recent books are Stop Autism Now and Stop Alzheimer's Now. Excellent books. And they are both books on neurodegeneration and neuroinflammation. Stop Autism Now is probably more about children, whereas Stop Alzheimer's Now is more about adults and all cases of neurodegenerations. And he uses the coconut oil. There is one chapter in both those books, it's called The Ketone Miracle. And he gives the story of how in about 1920, a group of doctors were putting their patients on strict fasting to cure epilepsy. And it did. You see, in fasting, the fat cells are getting broken down to release energy, and they release something called ketones, which can be used as fuel. But ketones are neuroprotective and they're neurohealers. So what these doctors found is that they were getting phenomenal results with this fasting, but of course a person must eat. So they decided to try a diet that mimicked the fasting, which was a very high fat diet. So they basically stopped all carbohydrates. They ate very few vegetables, high meat, high fat diet. And the same thing happened. It's called the ketogenic diet. The people did not return to their epilepsy, but a very, very difficult meal to eat because of the high fat. And Dr. Bruce Fife, in his book, he calls it the coconut ketogenic diet, where he basically suggests doing what I've been advising here: drop the carbohydrates right down, increase the fiber with your vegetables, good amounts of protein, and he uses animal protein, but I suggest the vegetable protein. And he says begin by having 1 teaspoon of coconut oil 3 times a day, even build that up to a dessert spoon of coconut oil 3 times a day. Some people even getting up to a tablespoon of coconut oil 3 times a day. With this excess coconut oil going in the body, the liver converts this medium chain fatty acids to ketones. And ketones, as I told you, are neuroprotectors and they are neurohealers.
Now let's hear from Barbara about a movie from the 1990s.
There was a movie made, I think, in the 90s called First Do No Harm. It has Meryl Streep in it, and it's a true story about a mother whose child got epilepsy. They were, of course, rushed him to hospital, tried different medications. Some medications sent this child like a mad boy, jumping off buildings, all sorts of things. So they changed his medication. Now he just turned into a zombie. And they were beginning to talk about cutting the top of his head off to do some tests on it. So the mother was terrified, as you can imagine. The child was only about 7, so she went to the library and she researched and she researched and she researched, and she found the ketogenic diet. And it was done at Johns Hopkins Hospital. I think it is still done there. And so, to cut a long story short, she got her son there. They immediately fasted this little boy for 2 days. Do you know, that was not a worry, because the medication he was on, he just didn't want to eat. They fasted him for 2 days, then they put him on the ketogenic diet, which was high fat. You know, he was eating bacon and eggs, and some meals were like mince, but a little bit of tomato, a little bit of lettuce. I think in the first week, he went from something like 10 seizures a day to about 3 in the week. I can't remember the exact timelines, but you can read it in Stop Autism Now, and you can see it in the movie, First Do No Harm. But I think it only took a matter of months, and this child was no seizures at all. And years later, still no seizures. Now, they told the parents that he would eventually have mental retardation because of the amount of fits that he was having. And he got to the point where he's the top of his class in school. Wow, just incredible story. And that's why the chapter in the book is called The Ketone Miracle. Just incredible. And Bruce Fife says you can get a far more acceptable dietary program by just dropping your carbs, having the vegetables, the proteins, and supplementing with the coconut oil. In Stop Alzheimer's Now, he has equally amazing stories of people who've been having turnarounds with Alzheimer's, dementia, multiple sclerosis, Huntington's chorea, Parkinson's disease. So it's, I think every home should have that book, because I don't know anyone who wants Alzheimer's. And he shows in this book that you can prevent damage to the brain cells, but you can also, by implementing the coconut oil, begin to have a healing taking place. The other day I told you that every membrane around the cell, every cell has a membrane around it, and that membrane is 50% protein, 50% fat, except for the brain cell, 70% fat. So that gives you a little bit of an idea on why the fat is so important in brain health.
Let's listen to Barbara tell us about the 2 oils which have been used the longest.
100 years ago and before, human beings got their polyunsaturated fats from the food that they ate. There's only been 2 oils that have been used since time dot, and that is the olive oil and the coconut oil. And both of these oils can be extracted from the flesh of the plant, so they're extracted very easily. Women used to have presses in their kitchen, and they could just extract the olive oil very easily.